Well, hello again, everybody. It is Wednesday afternoon, and we've got a special edition podcast here for everybody in Turdville. It is a pleasure and a treat to finally get a chance to visit with Marin Katusa, who many of you are familiar with through his work at KC for all those years. He's also a New York Times bestselling author and, just a guy I've really been looking forward to visit with. Again, he for a long time was a chief investment strategist at KC Research, left there about a year ago to form his own firm, Katusa Research, and heads Vancouver's largest resource fund. And all of his picks are right there on his Katusa Research site. Again, he's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Colder War, which everybody here in Turdville knows is something we're paying a lot of attention to and have for a couple of years. So, Marin, anyway, with that introduction, thank you so much for spending a couple of minutes of your time.
No problem.
Hey, listen, my man, I want to dive right in and tap into your expertise, particularly in the mining shares. This boy, anybody that's been in that sector for the last couple of years, well, you know all about it, like I'm telling you. I mean, it's been brutal. But yet, we came down, a lot of these shares and indices seemed to bottom through the back half of 2015. And after a brief little fake out in January, I mean, what, the HUI's up 80% or something like that. How do you feel, I guess, in general, about the mining sector here in early March?
Well, for your viewers who know my work, I've been very negative since 2011, early 2012. And this has been a great place to be because, you know, the resources are very cyclical and you have to be very contrarian. And right now with gold taking off and all these newsletter writers saying, you know, now's the time to jump in, you usually use these kind of promotions as a contrarian indicator. So mm-hmm. what you want to do is establish positions in only the absolute best management teams. That's the number one rule to be successful in the resource sector. People, people, people. Then you look at which commodity. Now, you know, I run with Cambridge House. We have a joint venture called Cambridge Katusa, and we run the biggest conference in the world for retail conferences. And we've had all the biggest names in the business, like McEwen Mining. It's doubled. You have, Silver Wheat in Franklin, Nevada. All of them were there, all the producers. And the reality was it was oversold and it was overshorted, the golds. And so we see this as kind of a short recovery. So the shorts covering their positions, plus mm-hmm. gold moved about $100. And on top of that, with the currency devaluations, the two currencies to be in right now, as I've been saying for the last year, U.S. dollar and also gold. Those are the two best currencies. So that's where we are. But we have to understand that I get a very unique perspective because I got a great relationship with the largest producers in Russia. And at the BMO conference, for example, I spent a lot of time with the Russians. And I've got a unique relationship with them where I built the trust with them. And they've shown me that, you know, because of their currencies, there are certain commodities that you want to stay out of. So be careful. Not all commodities are the same. I've been saying for years, since 2011, to stay the hell away from coal. That's been a great call. You know, sometimes people have to understand some of your best investments are the industries you stay away from, the investments
yeah.
you don't make.
Yep.
So, and I still say stay away from coal, even though people are like, but it's down 90%. Yes, and it's going to go lower. There's so much coal out there. So you got to look at the supply and demand metrics. So, you know, you look at PDAC or the BMO conference. I spend a lot of time on the road. There's a lot of confidence right now in the market, so be careful. But at the end of the day, this is a great time because overall, even though stocks have moved 50%, they're still down 75% from their peak. So there's still a lot of room to move, but not all of them, not all commodities. So be very selective, be very specific, and focus on the best people in the industry with the best tier one world-class assets that you can buy at a significant discount. That's what I've been doing.
You know, you mentioned the PDAC and the BMO conference. Having just attended both, the PDAC was just, earlier this week. I mean, do you sense, is there, I don't know, kind of a emotion change? I mean, is there a little more momentum, a little more spring in the step at these conferences? Are the companies able to raise a little more money?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. Yes and no. The good companies will always attract, like the best people in the industry should have the best companies, and they'll always attract the smart money. And we all know each other. We've all laughed at here, whoever's standing with cash. But the problem here, what people have to understand is that most of the funds that have survived, first of all, 80% of the funds have blown up. of the 20, let's say, that are surviving, most of them are fully invested. So there's this need for new capital, and it's coming, but it's coming in a different way. So they're trying to figure out the landscape themselves. And the companies that are invested, they see certain opportunities. So if they want to get into a new stock, they have to sell an existing position. So you have to be very careful on what you're buying. So I've always shared with my followers that you can find a great stock, but you also have to find who the shareholders of that stock are. You know, this is almost like four-dimensional research. You're not just researching the company, but who owns the company. Because what happens if this fund blows up and they have to sell the stock, irrelevant of what's going on with the company, there's something that could impact your share price. And if people follow stop losses, it's like a domino trigger effect. I published this 4 years ago. I coined the phrase trigger effect because it just creates a domino. And then the algo trading comes in and starts shorting it. So again, make sure you understand who the other shareholders in the companies are. And you want to follow a strong management team, and also make sure that the other largest shareholders are long-term strong funds that know what they're doing, not the hot money. Avoid the hot money in this sector.
You know, it's funny. I've been talking to a lot of folks so far this year because, you know, so many people are interested in getting interested in the miners again, thinking, okay, maybe the worst has passed. And so every time I interview somebody, one of the questions I ask is, okay, how do we, what's the key metric in picking a survivor, a winner going forward? But first of all, just a survivor coming out, you know, through the dark side and coming around and getting everything rolling again. And you already touched upon one key aspect that everybody says. It's the management team first and foremost, and have they had success in the past. You know, the other thing that also always gets mentioned too is jurisdiction. You know, where are your mines? Where are your resources and your assets?
I would add, it's very important. See, a lot of people figure, oh, well, this guy's a rock star. He had a big win in copper 12 years ago. Okay, fair enough. But at what price copper? You know, what jurisdiction? But did that team still stay together? Because it's never one guy. You see, you can have a great quarterback, but you need a strong offense. You need a strong defense. You know, you got to have a strong share structure. And what I'm getting at is start with the strong people, but just because someone had a success in the past, is that dream team still together, or did they break up to create their own franchises? Yeah. So these are factors that people don't look at. But more importantly, if someone who had success in copper is now trying to do, say, oil, for example, a totally different skill set, be very careful.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Okay, well, all right, now you got me wondering, with your experience and with things going and these extra, I mean, those, that's great. A bit of background that you provide about what people need to be considering. I mean, what are you buying? What's your favorite pick at this point? You mind sharing any ideas with us?
Sure, I'm pretty open about our position. The fund that I'm one of the largest shareholders of, we are the largest shareholder in a company called Brazil Resource Inc. And the ticker symbol is BRI on the Canadian Exchange. And the idea here is having a strong management team who've done it, been there before, who are fully invested. So the one chairman owns 10% of the company himself, has written checks all along the way. But more importantly, his dream team has been consistent. They've stuck together. They've all invested in. They've attracted management team that can go out and consolidate world-class assets. So that was the thesis of our investment. We've added to our position every year. And everyone can see where, you know, we're putting another million, over $1 million in the current financing with management who are all writing checks. And the idea here when we started in 2011 was by 2016 to get to 5 million ounces. And that's what I always told everyone. If we got to that point, if this company, BRI as I call it, because that's the ticker symbol in Canada, if they can get to 5 million ounces, this was a huge win. Well, because of the market turnback, their business plan was even more successful, and I was wrong. They got to over 9 million ounces, and I'm willing to bet that by the end of this year, they'll get to probably 11 or 12 million ounces just because of having a strong team that can pick off world-class assets that are at a significant discount to their replacement value. Your margin of safety increases. And now this company has so many assets in the company that when gold does take off, this is going to be a spin-out. You know, it's a perpetual dividend that shareholders today don't even recognize the value. And they have a uranium asset that is probably worth the whole market cap of the company itself when you compare it to the peers in the region in Athabasca in Canada, where the highest grade uranium is in the world. They have an asset there that they have a joint venture with Areva, which is France's largest nuclear company. and that asset alone values it for what it's trading today, and you get over 9 million ounces free. Now, what does 9 million ounces look like? Well, less than 1% of the companies that are publicly traded have over 9 million ounces with a 43-101 resource. That means an independent engineer came in and evaluated the numbers. So that's significant, and I'm looking at the long-term trend. You have an invested management team whose average price is probably higher than where it's trading here. They're fully focused, and this is, for me, a long-term play where every year since we started, we keep adding to our position, and strong management team are able to attract strong shareholders. And I'm willing to bet in 5 years, this stock will be over $5.
Yeah, now, this is one I don't own yet, but boy, you've got me intrigued. That's a lot of potential ounces. You've talked about the management team, but the other piece of that puzzle is where's all this stuff located at, Marin? Is it a good place?
The key here is it's not about potential ounces. These are already there.
Okay.
There's no risk to them because other companies have spent tens and 20, $30 million of drilling on assets that they've now accumulated.
Yeah.
So they have a few key projects. So they have a great project called the São Jorge project in Brazil that a company in 2011 was valued at four times the market cap of the company today just on that one asset. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a solid asset that, you know, you don't need $1,500 gold or $2,000 gold to make it. It has over a $200 million NPV at current gold prices. So that's incredible. Then they have a great project in the U.S., so they got that diversity, so you're not all your eggs aren't in one basket. It's called the Whistler Project. That is a multi-million ounce deposit that the company that owned that had a double the market cap just a few years ago than what BRI has today. So you look at, they've now been able to consolidate this package where the companies who had all these assets were worth multiples of what the company's trading at today. And then they've got what I call the secret gem in the company, a land package in the Athabasca Basin, which is in Saskatchewan in Canada,
mm-hmm.
probably the best uranium mining jurisdiction hands down in the world. And if you look at its peer comparable group, whether it's Fission with almost a $300 million market cap, NextGen with over a $300 million market cap, and BRI, just that asset, I'm hoping they will spin that out. That value of that asset will be worth more than what the company's trading today, and you get all those other 9.6 million ounces of gold for free.
How about that? All right, that's a pretty good story. I'm going to have to look into that.
Well, if you wanted to do a Warren Buffett value investor, my two favorite, you know, metals today are uranium and gold. I think those are your lowest risk metals in this environment where we are, because there's still a lot of risk in the world today. And that's why you also want, like you said, jurisdiction. Well, there's no better jurisdiction than, you know, Saskatchewan in Canada, which is ranked in the top three every year for the last 30 years for uranium. Then you got the U.S., which is the rule of law. And Brazil, what people don't understand is your dollar now stretches three times more than it did just a few years ago because their currency is devaluating.
Yeah.
So a lot of these big funds coming in are looking for, how do I get into Brazil?
Good point.
So that's why I'm looking at it. If you're Warren Buffett, this would be the way to play it.
But now you mentioned the world's not getting any safer out there. And I wanted to, like I said, take a couple of minutes, though, before I let you go and ask you about the new Cold War. We've been following this on my site here at TF Metals Report for the last couple of years, since before the Maidan Revolution, if you want to call it that, in Kiev. Most of us here on this site would call it a U.S.-sponsored coup. But you were writing your book, The Colder War, it seems, looks like, in 2014, because it came out in late 2014, didn't it?
Yeah, it was written in 2013, but with the publishers and the way they do it, they published it out, that's right, in the fall of 2014, and it cracked the New York Times bestseller list and the USA Today bestseller list. I think it was in November of 2014.
Okay, you're probably about due for a second edition or a new forward or something, aren't you, Marin?
Yeah, I've got many requests from it, many book offers, but the reality is, you know, I wrote the book as a hobby. It was an interest that I've always had. I've been talking about it for a decade since I was one of the founders and the largest individual shareholder investor in a company called Quadrilla, which is Europe's largest shale company. It was a massive success. Mm. And it was a company idea that I had in 2006 and 7. And it was based off of, you know, Europe's dependence on Russian natural resources. And, you know, the reality here is nothing's really changed. Yeah. You look at, you know, the media news that came out of, you know, that is vindicating Bush's Iraq and the uranium. Well, they've delivered about 1 million pounds of yellow cake out of Iraq into Canada here recently, and they've processed that. You know, there is a colder war going on. No doubt low oil prices put strain on Russia, but the Russian balance sheet is quite strong. And more importantly, their resources and people are directly aligned with the administration. So do not underestimate the force of Russia, especially if they align themselves with the emerging markets with China. And remember, a significant line, when I debated the host of CNN, he couldn't quite grasp this. He said, that's it. The ruble's crashing. It's the end of Russia. I said, well, actually, it'll be the opposite. A cheap ruble actually supports cheap oil production for them because they produce in rubles and they sell in other stronger currencies. And that's exactly what we've seen happen. So do not underestimate the Russians or the Chinese.
It's an excellent point. Just in your expertise, I just want to bounce this, I guess, idea off you. I can't say it's an original thought. It was kind of developed. A lot of folks do read a lot of Zero Hedge and give great weight to some of the stuff they write there. It seems as if this Cold War, as it's manifested itself in Ukraine, but now in Syria, does have a lot to do with energy and the supply of natural gas, and then even by extension, perhaps the kind of petrodollar recycling scheme, you know, and keeping energy priced in dollars. That's a big question that you probably don't have a lot of time to answer, but I mean, am I kind of barking up the right tree, connecting those dots, or do you think it's simpler than that?
That's part of it. You have the alliances that are being tested with the change of foreign policy under the Obama administration. You know, Obama's basically opened up Iran. That's rattled Israel and Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. two long-term allies of the U.S. Then you look at, you know, other resources. You touched on oil and natural gas, LNG, but also water. Water is a big one. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure in place. They also have the religious issues between Iran and the influence of Iran, which are the Shiites versus the Sunnis, led by the Saudis. So that's an issue. But also, I cover a chapter in my book also about the debt and the derivative market. That's something that a lot of people do not understand.
Yeah.
And the derivative market is probably the biggest risk in our markets that nobody has a grasp of how big and potential threatening it really is. So there's a lot of factors at stake. There's many things going on right now, and that's very bullish for gold. Remember, uncertainty and tension in the global markets is fantastic for gold. And gold is in an uptrend in every currency in the world, including the U.S. dollar this year. And also, you look at nations even such as Saudi Arabia, China, they need to diversify out of oil, out of natural gas, out of LNG. And uranium is without a doubt the cleanest and largest baseload power. It's the cheapest baseload power even today. And it's a great way in a low interest rate environment to create jobs. If you're thinking about quantitative easing for the people, if you're the Chinese, these massive infrastructure projects, well, a nuclear complex, rather than having an apocalypse with the issues with coal energy,
yeah.
Nuclear energy is part of the solution towards green energy and towards a cleaner environment. You can't just depend on natural gas or coal, but like the Americans, 20% of the baseload power in America, one in every five homes is powered with nuclear energy, the same will eventually happen in China. And that is huge growth. Massive growth for the nuclear sector.
Yeah, that augurs back to what you were talking about earlier with Brazil Resources, too.
Yeah.
Marin, it's been a pleasure to visit with you. I hope we can do it again someday. Again, for everybody, is Marin Katusa. He's the head of Katusa Research. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Colder War. You see a link to his site and a link to that book here on this podcast page. I encourage you to check them both out. Marin, thank you very much for spending a couple minutes in Turdville.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
All right, my friend. Thanks.